Tessa Grauer. I'm the Vice President for Thriving Communities at Reconstructing Judaism. I would like to welcome you to our leadership call on safety and inclusion. Thank you for joining us. Before I introduce today's speakers, I want to let you know about another call that we are doing next week. As you know, our leadership calls are open to congregational leadership writ large. Presidents, executive directors, administrators, clergy, educators, folks who want to come and who are interested in the topic that we're discussing. We also hold calls that are specific to roles. Sometimes we have calls just for presidents, sometimes just for educators, sometimes just for executive directors. We had a regularly scheduled executive director and administrator call for next week that we've decided to open up more widely to leadership because I think it is going to be relevant and interesting to other folks as well. That next week's call, so this will be January 24th, and we'll put a link into the chat for this call as well. If you want to register, next week's call is called, what is next week's call? Synagogue Real Estate: Should We Stay or Should We Go? We've had some conversations with some of you about building use, about thinking about how you use your space, sharing space, downsizing, facility sharing, et cetera. And so next week's call is going to be about that. For this special call, we're going to be joined by Karen Kolodny, who is a longtime Jewish communal executive. She's a member of the Reconstructing Judaism board. She's a lawyer. She has expertise in the area of synagogue real estate, and she's going to be working with us on this topic. So if you are interested in this, please feel free to join us next week as well. Okay, without further delay, I want to introduce you to two members of the Reconstructing Judaism staff and proud graduates of the RRC. The speakers today will be Rabbi Sandra Lawson, who is the Director of Racial Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Reconstructing Judaism, and Rabbi Maurice Harris, who is the Associate Director for Thriving Communities and Israel Affairs Specialist for the movement. Without further ado, I am turning it over to the two of you.
Hi, everybody. Welcome, and I hope that you find this conversation interesting that Maurice and I will be having. And we're going to be sharing some things that we've learned about using Reconstructionist values to develop a good safety plan for our congregations and our communities.
Sandra is, hi everybody as well. Rabbi Sandra is going to be sharing some thoughts about how incorporating the different voices and lived experiences of people in our congregations, in our, I would say, increasingly diverse congregations, helps us build safety plans that are not only better aligned with our values, but also better at creating safety. In fact, better at creating the most safety for the most people in our community.
And so Rabbi Maurice is going to take us, is going to be talking to us briefly, or going to be taking us to an online resource that we recently posted that you should have, and raising up some main topics that are there to be used as tools. And before we get going, one general piece of advice from us is please don't wait until a crisis to come up with a safety plan. If you come up with a safety plan when it's relatively quiet, it can be tweaked. And it can be easily tweaked when a crisis happens. And also, we also encourage you to please use values-based decision-making, the values-based decision-making process when you draw up your safety plan, and because this will actually include the voices of most of your members in your community.
So the way that we're going to do this, we're going to kind of do it in two parts. I'm going to offer one more small tidbit by way of introduction, and then I'm going to hand off to Sandra, and Sandra's going to talk a little bit about some of the diversity, equity, and inclusion issues that are deeply wrapped into a thoughtful planning process around building safety, and building safety that also upholds our values of inclusion. And then after that, I'm not going to walk us through the whole online resource we recently published, because it's many pages long. I'm just going to walk us through the outline of the sections of it and say a word or two about those sections and offer a couple ideas about how this guide can be put to use. So before I hand over to Sandra, I want to make a quick note about terminology. One of the things that in our department, as we've discussed security and safety over the last literally 6 years, going like nearly 6 years, going all the way back to the terrible attack in Pittsburgh, we've sometimes used the word security, we've sometimes used the word safety, we've sometimes used them both. And where we've landed is we think it makes the most sense to use the term safety. And when we use the term safety, what we're doing is we're including security as that word sort of conjures up images in our collective imagination, like security against violent harm from, you know, any outsider, sort of the most extreme images of security. So using the term safety, we include that notion of security, but we also include a more broad notion of security and steps you can take to prevent other kinds of harm. And I'll say more about what that looks like. And that's really under the umbrella of safety. So the other reason we like the word safety is because some of those different elements that sit under the umbrella of safety change over time, right? So for example, the community conversations in North America, in not just the Jewish community, but let's say other targeted minority religious communities that have houses of worship, that security discussion changes. It changes from year to year, right? There'll be moments in time when everybody's galvanized on a particular set of threats or terrible events. And then there'll be other moments when, and it's often news driven, the focus will shift. So what one thing we like about using the term safety is that it's broad enough to be able to hold the ways in which these different issues under the umbrella shift. A strong safety plan for a synagogue is one that will be pretty effective at adapting to a changing landscape. All right, handing it off to my colleague.
excuse me. So when we think about our security plan, actually, you know, when I talk to congregations, questions about security come up a lot. And because the days of we need security for for high holidays or an event, we'll just call the police department or sheriff department, those days we should think differently about how we do security now. Because we want to create a safety plan that includes the most voices as possible to make sure that it's a plan that is safe and secure for all of your members. Let me give you two examples here. When I was a campus rabbi at Elon, we had students that were uncomfortable with law enforcement. And you can imagine as an 18 to 21 year old, you know, if seeing a police officer that may have stopped you or broke up your party, you know, might make you not want to come to events. And so those were kinds of conversations that we had. And we created a security plan at the Hillel at Elon that made sure that students felt safe so they could come to our events and not have to worry about whatever they were concerned about with law enforcement. The other example I'm going to give you is made up, but it's based off of what I hear a lot. So almost every day, less now, but almost every day for a while, I was turning on my television or turning on NPR or whatever, and I'd hear a story about some jogger who happened to be Black wearing a hoodie or something, getting stopped by police or getting stopped by someone because they, for whatever reason, and the police stopped them and asked for ID. And of course, the jogger doesn't have ID because seriously, who jogs with ID? And if you do, that's awesome, but I've never have. And then they don't have ID, and then the jogger's day is ruined, and then you see this video of someone recording the police because they feel like they've been inappropriately stopped. The reason I'm bringing this up, now imagine, which isn't that hard to imagine, It is High Holidays or some other holiday. And you have called law enforcement to provide security. And I'm going to back up a minute. One of the things that needs to happen with safety plans is they need to be transparent, and they need to include, like I said, as many voices as possible. And those voices should also be your neighbors. And now back to the jogger. You have a police, and unbeknownst to you and your community, you have a jogger who cuts through your parking lot all the time on their morning jog. The jogger may see different, more police cars, may see more cars or more traffic, but isn't thinking about it because they are focused on jogging. The police stop that jogger, ask for information, get their ID. The jogger is held up and is not happy. And now you've created an issue in your community that you didn't want to have happen. If you have a safety and security plan that includes the most voices, that those voices including the outside of your community, the local church, the local neighbors, houses, because we don't live in a bubble, that jogger most likely might be more informed, may choose a different route, or you may know about that jogger and you didn't know about it before. The other thing is, when you include more diverse voices, you actually create a safety plan that is safer for everyone and is stronger. And when people may not like the plan, they have their voices have at least been heard. We don't want to create an environment where people don't feel safe and welcomed in our community. And at the same time, we also want people to feel safe in our community. And that doesn't mean a one size fits all. That means that your community has to decide what works best for your community. And whatever the diversity of your community is, your voices should be included. So for some people, that may mean law enforcement that is, you know, standing outside, inside the building. For others, that may mean law enforcement that is not uniformed. And other communities have made different choices that may not include law enforcement. And so when you're creating these plans, that's why we stress that you should not be making them when there's a crisis. You should think this through and create a plan where your entire community knows what the plan is, has bought into the plan, and you'll hear voices, and you also probably will learn something about your community that you didn't know before. Yeah, that's it.
Thanks, Sandra. I want to pick up from there, and one of the things that I've learned in the course of working on putting together resources over the last 5+ years is coming to be more and more aware of the actual demographics of the members of our congregations and of the North American Jewish community as a whole. And, you know, there have been different population surveys and there's different data out there. But what is clear and is measurable is that an increasing percentage of the North American Jewish community is made up of people of color and is made up of family systems that include people of color. And that's important because sometimes where this conversation goes that isn't really that constructive is this false opposition gets set up. Like, are we going to be safer, i.e. sort of secure our fortress and harden it more? That's how we sort of knee-jerk tend to think of being safer. Or are we going to be inclusive and create a space where not just people of color, but people across a variety of matrices of diversity don't experience fear, intimidation, or an increased likelihood of being improperly singled out or subjected to disrespectful treatment. And the reality is those things are not set up in opposition to each other, because the one of the biggest flaws in that way of thinking is it presumes that there's an us and a them, and that the us is a white Jewish community, and that the them is sometimes it's people of color, and sometimes it's white guys with lots of tats wearing working class clothes, who might be presumed to be, you know, super right wing white nationalists. But either way, it creates this idea that who are we? What is the us? Is this kind of monolithic thing? And the reality is, the us is a multiracial Jewish community, a Jewish community that also includes people with disabilities, that also includes people who present neurodiversity, and also includes some people who are recent immigrants to this country or who don't speak English. So once we start thinking of the us as being a diverse and ever more increasingly diverse group, then we are able to come at the question with the right set of lenses that allow us to think about everyone. I want to now share my screen briefly, and we're not going to spend a lot of time looking at my screen. But first, I want to check and make sure I have screen sharing privileges. Looks like I do. That's great. So this is from the new resource that we've recently published on our website. And you can see the core elements section. That's the section I just want to focus on for a little bit. And you can see that this starts with the idea, and this goes back to what Sandra was saying, of creating a plan. And the idea is to set as a goal for your congregation to create a comprehensive plan. And that may seem daunting because it's a lot of work. So one of the things we also advise about create a plan is don't get easily discouraged and accept the fact that you have to map out what the whole plan is eventually going to include, but you also have to pick where you're going to start. And actually, this resource includes a getting started worksheet that's designed to help you if you're like, where do I start? Because there's just so much here. But the idea is you want to have a committee. You want that committee to include people from a cross-section, along lines of race, but also along other lines of diversity, that are part of the community, also different age cohorts, if possible. And that group should be reporting to your board. And if you're a much smaller Chavurah-style congregation, call us and we'll talk with you about what it looks like when things are not so formally structured. But generally speaking, you're wanting to have a diverse representative group that is not just people who, quote unquote, are interested in security. Because if it's just the handful of people who think a lot about security, you are at risk of not getting a broad mix of values, experiences, and feelings going into the hopper as you create this plan. And as you develop and decide with your board's approval and your clergy's support, different parts of this plan, that's when you think about who in your community you're going to train and you practice parts of the plan. So that's what I wanted to say about number one. I'm going to speak a little bit about 2 through 6 and then unscreen share. For two, incorporate diversity, equity, and inclusion into your plan. What that section gets into is a lot of tachlis, a lot of practical advice about ways to do this. We have learned a lot in developing this resource from a range of different experts and also a range of different advocacy groups that all think about these issues through a variety of lenses. And what we've tried to do is take what seemed to us like the best and clearest ideas from that range of sources and combine bind them together and then offer them up as options to you. So it's not like there's only one way to incorporate DEI into your plan. We assume different congregations will end up making a range of different final choices about what their plan is going to look like. Just as Sandra said, in some communities, there will definitely be a role for law enforcement at certain events. And there's a range of ways that that can look, right? And there's also conversations that your congregation can have with law enforcement before the fact, describing the members of your diverse community to them, letting them know about what all of your goals are and asking for them to support you and help you in upholding those values and goals. So the outcomes are going to vary depending on who's in your congregation, how you reckon with the different values and concerns in your unique situation, and then what you come up with. And there will be compromise decisions that may not leave everyone feeling perfectly thrilled. But as Sandra said, if people who are really representing a diverse range of voices and subgroups of your congregation have a voice in the effort of crafting the plan, then at least everybody had a voice. At least everybody played a role. And that's a mitzvah. That's a fulfillment of a commandment, of a divine obligation, as we understand it. All right. Three, really straightforward. Whether you're a congregation that is really close with your local police department or a congregation that actually is very engaged in local activism and is emotionally very distant from your local law enforcement, wherever your congregation might fit on that spectrum, and we run the gamut in our movement, wherever your congregation might fit on the spectrum, there's one common truth. If you live in a community that has law enforcement, then law enforcement de facto is part of your reality. If somebody calls the police because they see that something scary looking to them is happening at your congregation, at one of your gatherings, whatever your relationship is with law enforcement, they will respond, they will come. So that's why we really urge that part of this process be about communicating in advance with your local law enforcement and letting them know the things that you want them to know and understand. Some of those things may have to do with asking them to be good partners with you in upholding your DEI values. Some of them might just be very basic nuts and bolts, like letting them know on the following days of the week, every month, this is when we gather. These are the days of the week and times when children in large numbers gather. This is where we have decided we will go if we have to evacuate the building. We want you to know that. Or we hire a private security professional from the following company on the following dates of the year. And that person is or is not uniformed, is or is not armed, is stationed at such and such a place. By communicating proactively with law enforcement, what you're doing is you are diminishing the odds that something will happen and law enforcement will show up and then end up doing something that causes harm to somebody innocent. It will also decrease the possibility that law enforcement will make an honest mistake, like not knowing that you had hired an armed security person and then thinking that person might actually be a threat. That's a real scenario that has really happened. Number four, communicating and partnering with neighbors. By neighbors, we literally mean neighboring houses of worship, but also possibly crosstown neighbors. We really, really encourage forming connections and discussing how to support safety and security concerns with other houses of worship from minority communities that are also targeted for hate or violent aggression at a greater frequency than average. And opening up those relationships and starting to talk about how we might play a role during each other's major annual gatherings to support each other builds community. But we also mean neighbors, like if your neighbors are people who live in houses or are people who are in small cafes and shops, building relationships with them and asking for how they can help make you more secure and how you can be good neighbors to them. Number five, modifying your building and your online presence. The guide has a lot of practical tips about strongly recommended practices to decrease your vulnerability and also to do it in a way that's mindful of diversity concerns. And then the last section here talks about some practical advice if you do hire professional security. And again, that advice covers things ranging from very practical common sense issues that might get overlooked to DEI issues, to finding out what kind of experience or training does this company actually require its employees to go through? And finding out if the company is receptive and helpful when you bring up that you want help upholding these values, or if they act like you're coming from another planet and don't know what you're talking about. That's a really good way to start to get a feel for whether or not these are folks you want to hire. So I'm going to unscreen share, and I want to say one last thing that is about safety in that broader sense. This guide takes to heart some practical advice that we've gotten from what I'll call very mainstream security authorities, as well as advocacy groups that are focusing on making sure our congregations are safe places for Jews of color and Jews with disabilities and LGBTQ people, et cetera. What we have learned collectively is that the sort of mainstream security safety folks and the social justice advocate safety folks concur that it's really important to use common sense and accurate data to create a hierarchy of preventative steps. So you want to prioritize making sure that the first bases you have covered to make your congregation more safe are the ways in which people are most likely to suffer physical harm. So it turns out the number one way that someone is likely to die in your congregation at the meeting place of your congregation is by having a heart attack. And the likelihood of that happening compared to the statistical likelihood, and I'm sorry to go to sort of disturbing places here, but of an ideological crazy shooter busting into your synagogue, it's like zillions to one, the odds of that, even in today's heightened climate of people behaving badly and harassing each other and engaging in all kinds of acts of hate and anti-Semitism online and in other fora. Even so, the odds of saving a life because you have an artificial defibrillator, not an artificial, an automatic electronic defibrillator, an AED device, the odds of saving a life because you had that as opposed to because you spent hours and hours training everybody on an active shooter drill, there's no comparison statistically. Doesn't mean you shouldn't get some training for the active shooter scenario. It just means let's use data to actually prioritize safety. So, you know, going down the list are other health-related issues. They include things like somebody bleeding. That is a scenario that can also cost someone's life. And I'll mention as well, There are still folks in our communities and in other communities who have very, very different feelings and understandings of what the right level of community precaution and practice is vis-a-vis COVID. And COVID has also raised our awareness that there are community hygiene practices that you could choose to increase or decrease. But if you chose to increase them, you might be doing it because of other people who are part of your community or who may be guests of your community who have long-term health issues that could be put at risk. COVID has perhaps as a small silver lining helped us realize that we are all connected to each other in those ways as well. It's important to continue having the conversations about how to keep people safe. If you start talking about acts of violence causing someone physical injury or other kinds of harm, the most likely scenarios for that to happen within a synagogue is some kind of domestic violent interaction that involves family members who are part of your congregation. And that might happen with, you know, at the site of your gathering, or it might happen offsite. So our guide includes hotline information and preventative educational information and things like that. As you move further down the list, you get to things that are very, very unlikely to occur, but that also are in our thoughts. And that is one of the sad things about living during a period of increased anti-Semitic acts online and in other public fora, and also an increased time of anti-Arab and Muslim acts and of racist behavior in public and in the open. So we can't help but worry and think about this stuff. And it does make good common sense to get some training, implement some measures to decrease risk and increase the odds of people being able to know what their options are and survive a terrible situation like that. And so our guide includes a variety of resources that, again, run the gamut from what I'll call very traditional mainstream security kinds of advice that are available to the North American Jewish community at no charge, to advice that has come more from the lived experience of Jewish and non-Jewish organizations that have focused on grassroots development of what I would call on the ground, neighbor to neighbor security strategies. And just a final word about all of this, what we're really encouraging is going through a thoughtful values-based decision-making process and using this guide as a tool to make thoughtful decisions that you then communicate with great transparency to your congregation. That from time to time, the rabbi, if you have a rabbi on staff or your president or other members of the community in appropriate venues, update people and also let people know how they can give feedback. So that is an overview of what we have in the guide and how this process of creating the guide has led us to think holistically about developing these strategies. Whew. That was a lot. I want to hand it back over to Sandra, and then we can pivot into some discussion.
So the last two things I want to say is, one, I know people have a lot of different feelings about what it means, safety and security. And if you are safety, if you incorporate diverse voices, and you hear from those voices and decide to go a different route, you will cause harm in your community and you will hear about it. I've seen that happen where because a crisis happened, they threw away the plan, called an expert on what to do, and did not really take the advice of the expert because of fear, and caused harm in their community. And the other thing I want to say is, you know, when you are working with your security detail or law enforcement and they come into your community, please educate them. And remind them that their role is to provide safety and security or whatever you decide their role should be. And outsiders in our community learn a lot from what we don't tell them. So if you are a predominantly, let's say, predominantly white community, and you have local law enforcement, and you don't educate law enforcement about who comes to your events or what the Jewish community looks like, they will take cues from you. And when someone who looks different, let's say a black person, comes into your community, law enforcement has never seen a black person come in your community. This person may have all the accoutrements of a Jewish person, a kippot, a kippah, a tzitzit, all that, but the law enforcement will see them as might see them as an outsider or someone that they don't belong, and may prevent them from coming into the community. This happens all the time. It happens all the time. And so just think about that. I'm going to share, because I'm sensitive to, like, I think in this era of people wanting to make sure that people of color are protected, that's why I'm often use examples from when I was a campus rabbi, when we did have young folks that were hesitant to come to events because of law enforcement. And one of the things that we did was we sort of like invited law enforcement to all of our events, like not all of them, but like made sure they came they could come as they wanted to, but they sort of like humanized the police for our students. And so so the police officer would come to our bagel brunches or come to anything, so that when they were there to provide security, young folks weren't so scared of them. And so again, I'll just say again, transparency, diverse voices, and but right now we want to kind of hear from you. We are going to take some questions, but one of the things I've learned as being an educator is that so what I call like sort of ceiling in the learning. And so I'm curious if you what some of you may have learned from this process, or some thoughts that you have, and then we'll get to questions, and we might also learn something from hearing from you.
I'm going to take, you can put questions in the chat, or you can raise your electronic hand. I can't see everybody on one screen, so can't promise that I'm going to get to you. If I don't see you, forgive me, and figure out another way to just speak up.
I just posted the link to the guide again in the chat. While we're waiting, I'll just amplify a little bit of what Sandra was just talking about. I love the example that Sandra offered, where here she is serving as rabbi to a Jewish community where there's a decent number of people who feel less safe when the police are present. And what I heard you say, Sandra, was after you all processed it, you decided actually that what you were going to do was not push them further away, but draw them in, mm-hmm. and then converse, and try to get everybody, try to get them more aligned with what you're all about and what you're looking for in terms of support for safety. And then you also were hoping for an outcome where the worry and anxiety among some of the members of the community would drop over time. And what I love about that example is how specific it is to the unique circumstances in the situation. So, like, one of the tips that's in this document is we encourage congregations to create an internal document that names all of the different kinds of diversity that you're able to identify that are part of your community. And then extend it a little bit further. Don't just think about, you know, who are the people who are coming to your gathering place on a regular basis, but also who are visitors, right? I mean, we're Jews, haknasat orchim, caring for the well-being of guests is one of our big mitzvahs. So also think about visitors who come through your community. And also think about, you know, if you happen to have a building of your own and you rent space in that building to outside groups, maybe 12-step meeting, maybe scouts, who knows, think about them too. And now what you've got is this pretty complete demographic sketch, as best you were able to create, of who's in your community in an internal document. And then you can include a couple brief notes about what your overall safety and security goals are. And common sense stuff, like we want anybody who might be deranged and looking to cause physical harm in our building to ideally be prevented from doing so. So yes, we want that, but we also want, everybody who takes part in the life of this community when we gather to experience a sense that they're being supported and that they are being held in as much safety as possible. And to name that, and now you've got a document that you can not only use as you train your own ushers or volunteers or greeters or religious school teachers in just some general principles that you're trying to get everybody to implement, you also have a document you could potentially share with your local police or with a security company if you end up deciding to work with a security company. And you have an opportunity to have a conversation and to look at that document together. So wherever you land in your action plan around some of these questions about hiring security or not, involving the police in the building, outside the building or not, wherever you land with it, you can always take steps that are mindful of and seeking to increase the chances of success at meeting all of your goals.
Thanks, Maurice. I see that there are a couple of comments and questions in the chat and some questions with raised hands. I'm going to start with the answer to Sandra's question. Like somebody saying, zooming out, what did you learn from this before we dive into the specific question? So I want to just call out Leslie Rothman's comment. I love the broader safety definition and the focus on DEI as a major and inherent component of security and safety. I hadn't thought yet about including lots of continuing feedback and input from all members of the community. Makes so much sense. So thanks, Leslie, for identifying that. I think we can talk to and Rabbi Fred from Adat Shalom has also just said plus one to Leslie, right? Grateful for the full integration of this. I want to point to some of the questions. There is a specific question. Do you want me to read them to you, Maurice and Sandra, or do you want to just take a look at the questions? Do you want me to call on people?
Elliot wouldn't mind unmuting and saying the question that he has out loud, if that's okay.
Sure. Elliot Frolicsteen-Appel.
Yeah, Elliot Frolicsteen-Appel, I'm a former president at JRC in Evanston. I know my colleague Nancy is on, also from JRC. I was just noting a dynamic that, while we're having the debate of the merits of, hiring uniform security, and in our instance, it looks like the local police department, which is actually lovely and diverse and attentive, may be our best option. But if we want to spend budget on training and other initiatives internally, what we're finding is our congregants are saying, well, all the other congregations have uniform security. So if we don't, what's our problem? Even if we try to like explain our thinking and some of the consequences of this and some of the odds, they're like, well, Aunt Shirley won't come if we don't have security, uniform security at Junior's bat mitzvah. So I guess we have to have it. And it's just it. I'm finding it a confounding sort of dynamic. I don't know if Nancy feels the same sort of sense, but I'm just wondering if other other congregations are experiencing a similar sort of dynamic.
So I just want to say to that,
Nancy.
And hi, Nancy, sorry to cut you off, but like, this is why it's really important to include diverse voices, you know, depending on your community. I mean, some communities have Bar Mitzvahs completely separate from other services. And if that's the case, then you can appeal to those families. And if that is not the case, or if you want to have a however you want to go about this, including those families in this discussion, along with everyone else's voices, you will come up with a plan that makes people feel more safe, more secure. And this is why it's so important to think about this stuff before a crisis hits. And then, like, you know, having a conversation with those families, say, look, we think this is important. We are creating a committee to talk about our safety and security plan. Will you come and be part of our safety meetings and safety discussions? And so, like, this will help all of that. And also it will, by discussing this, you'll actually devote resources more effectively to what you're trying to do. Okay, Nancy. And then I see David's been up here for a while, but sorry about cutting you off, Nancy. Hi.
Oh, no, that's fine. Just to add to the dynamic, when we explored private, maybe ununiformed security, the amount of training they have in de-escalation is woefully inadequate compared to what the Evanston Police Department has. And so what we've been trying to do is explain that. You know, as people say, why do you have uniformed police? We say, well, they're the best trained, you know, in de-escalation, which is the most likely issue that we're going to face. Is someone upset or a mental health issue? And they get it. But by and large, I think people have been more in favor in this since October of having that security. I think it gives them a sense of maybe false security, but it does allow people to come together in community. So by and large, I think our congregation has bought into that, even if we haven't individually.
And it's, again, this is not, it's not, it's never a one size fits all. I mean, it isn't. And that's why it's important to continue having these discussions. Okay, I see David and Hallie have been waiting for a minute. So go ahead, David.
Our shul safety committee has stopped existing a few times over the last 10 years, and I'm the new chair, and I'm wondering what things I can do to help us continue.
Maurice, you want to take that one?
So basically what you're saying is right now there isn't a functioning committee, and you're hoping to inspire people to
We just had our first meeting last a couple weeks ago. This is our third iteration.
Over okay. 10. That we, sounds like prog-
Yeah, we exist.
Okay, good. I was trying to capture a quote that related to the last question from the guide. So I may have missed a part of the question you just asked. Could you just say it again real quick?
I'm just wondering what things I can do to help us be sustainable and continue so that, you know, by this time next year, our committee has had a whole year of existence.
Right. Okay. So there's a few things that you can try to do. I say try because that's what you can do. But the first is building support for the work of your committee. Among multiple leaders. So, you know, having a couple different people in your committee nudge your rabbi, even, I know your rabbi, so even though he's already genial and on board, it doesn't matter. And I see he got booted off the call, so ha ha ha. But, you know, strategically nudge your president and your clergy and other key staff members to say, you know, there's no crisis right now. Our committee's relaunched and we're excited about that. However, we know it's going to be a long haul and require some extra effort to sustain this committee. And we want to be able to sustain it and complete not only getting a comprehensive safety plan that's up to date for us, but then have, you know, people invested in making it normative as part of our regular operations. And so we're bugging you to just repeatedly ask for your support for that goal, to keep your eyes open for other people who could potentially come onto the committee, because what we don't want to do is have everybody who's currently on the committee still be the same people on it in 2 years. We know we'll burn them out. So part of it is just bugging other people in leadership. Part of it is also looking at who you have in the room presently, looking at the different items that would be on a full-blown to-do list if you were going to achieve the goal of a comprehensive safety plan, triaging that list, coming up with your top two or three priorities, and, you know, making the decision in your own minds as a committee that you know you have the strength and endurance to get through these three things, and that you're reaching out to others to take responsibility for helping carry the ball forward after that. I know this is a challenge for all sorts of committees that are doing important work. But a lot of times what happens is committees that have seen this cycle play out before, where there's renewed energy, a committee reasserts itself, gets some good work done, and then things go dormant again. We know that that often happens, but what often doesn't happen is just taking some steps along the lines of what I've described to try to build allies, build supporters, and start to come onto the committee by the end of a year from now. And that's what you can do, you know, is give it your best shot. And beyond that, you can always reach out to us. Part of what we do in thriving communities is be thought partners with you, and, you know, figure out with you how to get over little hurdles as they come up.
That's what I was going to say in relation to Jody Cushion's comment also at the beginning about, you know, where do we, what's the work that we need to be done? Really, please do reach out to your liaison if you feel stuck with some of the specifics. For individual congregations, it's helpful to talk, you know, to talk it through, or for us to put people in conversation with each other if you're addressing similar kinds of issues. Hallie, you've had your hand up, and I saw there was another question in the chat from Benita.
Thanks. The first thing I want to say is thank you. This is so encouraging and so comprehensive, and feels very supportive in so many different ways. I want to share one thing that is happening well, at least it's trying to happen well in the Cleveland area. Our federation has a whole security department, which is apparently the model for how the Federation Congregation Security Apparatus Partnership could work. And one of the things they require of the congregations who use their security services is to have a congregational greeter corps. And different communities call it different things, but the members are required to have somebody at the front door who knows the community. So it's not just about the law enforcement folks making those decisions about who gets to come in, and they can learn from each other. And the law enforcement is helped, you know, is brought into the community in a little bit in that way as well. So they begin to count on each other to recognize what the diverse membership and guest core looks like. And it also builds that relationship more broadly. I just wanted to share that.
Thanks, Hallie. Maurice or Sandra, do you have a response?
No, just okay. Thank you.
I'll just add that is one of the practices that our guide encourages. And in addition to that, our guide encourages giving some training to anybody who is serving in that role, that kind of role. you know, where their primary function may be greeting, they are also playing a role in terms of safety and observation, but providing the folks who do that with training on the language that you are wanting everyone on staff and in a volunteer role to use, and faux pas, that some people will all make faux pas, but there are preventable faux pas that people won't make if only someone simply says, hey, by the way, did you know that if you happen to ask somebody, you know, these kinds of things, these are the different ways that could cause harm and could hurt. So providing training to your volunteers, and the training doesn't have to be a million hours. There is a lot of common sense training that can be learned in a half an hour. And it all makes a difference.
Okay, we have two more minutes. There was a question in the chat from Benita. I want David to be able to voice his question, and then we will call it a wrap after that. The question from the chat is, how do we help our community move forward from fear of the police? And David, please ask your question as well. We'll let our speakers respond to both of them, and then we'll call it a day.
Yeah, I was just curious if there's anything in the guide about cybersecurity issues, or if you had any resources about that. We've had a couple issues lately with an email being either hacked or spoofed, and some Zoom blasting and things like that.
To be brief, I just put in the chat, yes, there is a little bit, but please be in touch with us.
And to Benita's question about fear, I'm looking for Benita. I don't see her on the screen. I like to actually be able to see. Oh, I see. Okay, I see. So the reality is you may not be able to alleviate people's fear. People have fear and they're afraid. What you can do, and I hope this helps, is by listening to people, and back to transparency, including voices, and also knowing if you go the route of that your community decides that you really need to hire law enforcement, having your community get to know the law enforcement people that will be in your community will go a long way, and people still have fear. And so that's why I keep going back to this. This is a process that should not be done when a community is afraid or when a community is in fear, because people often make decisions that are not helpful. And so having a thoughtful process, and including as many voices as possible and listening to people, you may spend a lot of time listening before you even start working on a plan. And that's good, because in this process, you're building relationships, you're building trust, and that all of that helps with creating a good safety plan.
Okay, we know there are more questions. We will save the chat, and we will make sure that your liaisons know if there's a question that's come from a particular community. Thanks everybody for joining this call. Thanks so much to Rabbi Sandra and Rabbi Maurice for presenting. We are looking forward to seeing you on our next call if you'd like to join us. Thanks for coming today. I hope you have a good rest of your day.